On the cultural side, World Heritage Sites have been absolutely, in the last decade, a target for destruction as a way of rewriting history, I suppose. Has that been an issue for natural sites?
Not so much, because it's not so easy to, you know, to destroy a building, destroy a church or a temple or even an old city like Aleppo. It's not so easy because it's really many, many acres or hectares of land that's protected. So it hasn't been such an issue. There are natural disasters, that's more of an issue there. But I'm very sympathetic to the targets made to the cultural sites. What I want to say now is related to this, but also goes back to the silos. At one point when I was director general of IUCN, I visited some of our offices and our members in Lebanon, in Syria, and in Jordan. And we stopped in Palmyra, because in Palmyra there was a wonderful young Italian man who was working on a bird, the ibis, which was very threatened. And I was very happy to talk to him. But I said, we're in Palmyra. I really want to see the cultural site. And I was surrounded by a huge delegation of people who were traveling with me and then people who were receiving me. And they sort of looked at me as if I was crazy. It really shocked me that people working on the natural world, and there was no natural site there, there was just this work on endangered species, would not think that for us as citizens of the world, knowing and appreciating the cultural site was important at all. So they took me, and I'm so glad I went, and it was amazing. And
that brings me to something, which is this, the original melding of two conventions, one on culture and one on nature, at the beginning in 72. And at the beginning, of course, it was historical monuments on the one edge and the big flora fauna on the other edge. And then slowly, gradually, it's come into the center of the crossover between culture and nature. At the moment, your organization or your previous organization is embarked on a whole culture-nature journey, as it's called. And I don't know how much you were involved in that and how you see that. It also has an indigenous layer, of course.
Right. Because IUCN, of course, works with indigenous people and peoples, and now there is a membership category for them, which I think is very good. And so I was involved really at the very beginning of that, when there were the big arguments about the categories of protected areas. And of course, the categories which have people living there is very linked to the cultural reasons why they live there. And I was very much in favor of that. And that was a tough argument, believe it or not. There are parts of IUCN's community says, you know, we're not interested in what human beings do. We're interested in flora and fauna. But I think it's a very good move now that they have sort of tried to bring this closer together. Whether it's going to be challenging, because still I would say 80% of IUCN's members are not so interested in the culture. I think since early 2000, the directors general did not necessarily come just from one part of that scientific spectrum. They were really more policy people. That's what I would describe myself. That's the way I would describe my predecessor, Achim Steiner, and also Inger Andersen. And so I think that helped a little bit to get a wider understanding of the different ways of measuring outstanding universal values or just values of the richness of our planet. But the pressure from the huge number of members is very important. I think it will help that we have those indigenous peoples groups now.